Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. Bienvenidos, bienveni, benvindo. In this century, Florida has been a laboratory for conservative policies, from school vouchers to abortion restrictions. But the latest campaign feels especially sweeping. This month, Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and the GOP-controlled state legislature put forth a constitutional amendment proposal that would drastically reduce, and perhaps eliminate, property taxes. In other words, the revenue source that has funded local government and local government services since time immemorial. If voters approve the ballot measure in November, the homestead exemption on non-school property tax levies would rise threefold next year to $150,000, then to $250,000 in 2028, and then perhaps to full exemption. Local governments could see a loss of $13 billion in the next 2 years, which means Floridians will have to decide, would the admittedly welcome tax relief be worth the potential public services grief? Can local government survive this revolution? And in the end, is that the whole point? South Florida stands to be heavily impacted, so we'd of course like to hear your thoughts. Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Few local government officials appreciate the impact of a move like this better than county property appraisers, who estimate our taxable property values and apply those homestead exemptions. So we've invited three of South Florida's property appraisers to help us understand what we face if this proposal passes. Joining me now are Tomas Regalado, Miami-Dade County's appraiser and former mayor of the city of Miami, Marty Kerr, his counterpart in Broward County, and Dorothy Jacks, their counterpart in Palm Beach County. Welcome to all of you.
Well, thank you so much, Tim, for having us on and for inviting us to talk about this today.
Thank you, Tim.
I'd like to start with a clip here of Governor DeSantis this month making the claim that seems to be at the heart of this campaign, which is property taxes are essentially an unfair levy on homeowners.
When you're taxing wealth or property, it's like you're taxing an unrealized gain every year. You buy your house, okay, you pay a sales tax, you pay taxes in that transaction, and then you keep getting taxed year after year after year, and sometimes more. Even with a homestead, it still can go up, and all of a sudden, you could be paying way more.
Tomas Regalado of Miami-Dade County, just briefly, I'd like to hear your response to the governor's assertion that the model that local governments in this state have relied on for three-fourths of their revenue is in fact an unfair recurring tax we would never impose on any other purchase in our lives. Is he right?
I think he's half right, but I do think that what we hear from the people is that they are very upset, very angry that they can have a house. They cannot have a house if they not keep paying rent to the government. Mm-hmm. And that's the narrative that the governor and some people are creating. I believe that is true in terms of many people that have their home, that live on a check from their retirement from Social Security. And I've seen it every single day. Granted, we have thousands and thousands of people that are using some kind of relief right now without the referendum, mm-hmm. with all the exceptions that we have.
Right.
But I believe that there is a movement in the state of Florida, or at least here right. in Miami-Dade County, of people wanting to vote for them instead of the government.
Right. That's an interesting way of putting it, a homeowner paying rent to the government. Marty Kerr, from your perspective as Broward County's property appraiser, what are your thoughts about the governor's assessment of the property tax tradition that you just heard?
I think, and again, Tim, thank you so much for having me on. And I'll tell you my thoughts about it. I think the governor's perception is the perception actually of a lot of people. And I also think other people have different thoughts as well. And here's the issue, really, that's most important is, right now there's going to be a constitutional amendment that's going to be put before the voters in November. And this amendment is very important, very consequential, and can really change things. And I think what people need to think about is this. When there's an elected official that you're not happy with, you can change that elected official for somebody else by voting somebody else in there.
Sure.
When you amend the Constitution, it's kind of there forever. And so at the end of the day, one thing that I know I'm doing, and I know Tomas is doing, and Dorothy's doing in Palm Beach County, is we're basically just giving the people of our communities all of the facts. Basically, this is the savings to property owner in our counties. This is the fiscal impact of local government, so that when they go and they vote, they can make the best, most informed decision possible. And that's pretty much the approach that we're taking.
Okay. Dorothy Jacks, as Palm Beach County's property appraiser, your thoughts on this central question the governor raises as the basis for reducing, if not eliminating, property taxes?
I'm not sure I agree that it is a rent on one's home. I think you have to think about it as a tax in the form of many other taxes that we pay. I don't know that every month when you pay your tax on your utility bills, or when you pay your certainly sales tax or your gas tax, you think to yourself, oh, I'm giving that money to the government and somehow I owe the government and I can't buy this item without paying that money to the government. I mean, in a way, that's also something to be thought about. However, I will say, and I agree with my friend Tomas very much, that there are ways that you could help the folks in Florida who are really struggling with property tax that would not be so difficult for local government.
Right.
After all, it is the government that people like the most. And to create an issue where they will have to raise rates, raise taxes on everybody else is just pretty tough to swallow when there are other ways this could be done to help those that need it the most.
That's an interesting point you make, that people like their local government more than they highly regard, say, the federal government or the state government. I think that's an interesting point to ponder there. All that said, Tomas Regalado, if this ballot measure passes in November and those homeowners' homestead exemptions take those leaps from 50% to 150% next year, then 250%, in 250,000 in 2028, and then maybe even full exemption down the road. Estimates, as I mentioned, point to $4.6 billion in revenue being lost statewide next year and $8.4 billion in 2028. What will the impact be for Miami-Dade County in terms of lost property tax revenue? And how does your time, for example, as mayor of Miami affect how you approach this?
Well, I would, if I were the mayor of Miami at this moment, coming up with some a heavy impact from the referendum, I will do what we did in 2009 when we have the bubble and when we have the foreclosure crisis. Tim, at that time, we had in the budget of the city of Miami, the largest in South Florida, on the state of Florida, $100 million deficit,
right?
Because value have dropped like a rock. And what we did is we sort of capped the pensions. So, there is an escalating table for the pension. We reduced some salaries, but we did not fire employees. We did not alter services. And it worked. Suddenly the investors, the developers decided that Miami was the place to build, and we had billions and billions of dollars every single year. So just tighten
right.
the belt.
As I remember, though, you and the city manager at that time during the Great Recession did have to consider some layoffs, including police and fire, but you were able to count on things like federal grants and pension and salary adjustments to make it work. Are you going to have to, think about those same kind of things if you lose that property tax revenue today, as opposed to the Great Recession?
Well, the county is our regional government, so there will be small municipalities that will be hurt, and hopefully they will figure out a way or get some relief from the state. But the county that offer the basic services will lose, so we believe, $303 million in the homestead reduction and about 50 some million dollars in the lowering the 10% cap to 5%. This is almost $400 million in a $13 billion budget. Yes, there were some requirements in the implementing bill, but now I believe that this has been solved by just adding another line saying that the commissioners have the right to propose some different programs to be paid out of the general budget.
And let's remind people that it appears the proposed property tax reduction would not touch certain areas such as schools and public safety and other essential services. And I misspoke a little earlier. I want to correct myself. I was using percentages instead of dollars. These homestead exemptions would take leaps from $50,000 currently to $150,000 next year, then $250,000 in 2028. Marty Kerr, can you walk us through the impact in Broward County, where we should remind folks some local governments rely exclusively on residential property taxes? No, and your public hospital system, for example, is a big consideration as well, no?
It is. And I that's a great question, Tim. And this is what I was really hoping to talk about today, because at the end of the day, as I said before, everybody in Florida is going to ask to be vote for or against this amendment, and they just need all the information. And so let me just quickly bring you through how it affects Broward County with each of the proposed exemptions that would take into place. So if this passes with more than 60% of the vote on January 1st, 2027, if you were a resident on or before January 1st, 2027, you would first get $150,000 homestead exemption. So what does that mean for Broward County? Right now, there are 424,000 homesteaded properties in Broward County. If that were in effect, the average property owner would save right about $1,325. But the Broward County Commission, for example, would lose about 11% of what it collects in its property taxes, which is around $200 million. The next year in 2028, there'd be a $250,000 exemption. And when that's applied, the average property owner in Broward County would save about $2,661, but the Broward County Commission would lose right about $333 million, which is about 19% of what they collect. And then what the constitutional amendment says, it says the legislature is supposed to make a schedule to possibly eliminate all homestead property taxes. And if that were the case, for all taxing authorities but the school board. Again, there are 424,000 homesteaded properties. The average property owner would save about $3,448. The county commission would lose about $636 million. And you asked something very important. You asked about all of our cities and all of our taxing authorities. And all of our cities are impacted differently depending on how much homesteaded property they have and how much commercial property they have. So let's say, for example, they eliminated all homestead property taxes. The two cities in Broward County that are stark contrast to each other are Pembroke Park and Parkland. Pembroke Park has barely any homesteaded properties. It's a mobile home community with commercial properties. They will lose about 1.4% of what they collect. That's negligible. They can take that. However, Parkland, which is a bedroom community, almost all homesteaded, would lose about 75% of what they collect in property taxes. And what I think is very important is that when people go and vote in November, they just really do their research because this is such a very, very important consequential issue.
Good advice to do the research. We have Jerry in South Miami on the line. You want to replace property taxes with a progressive income tax, Jerry. Tell us what you mean, and welcome to the South Florida Roundup.
Well, thank you. Well, two things I learned when I was a kid. My father taught me there's no free lunch, and when I was a very little kid, I learned there's no tooth fairy. You can't take away the revenues, you'll lose most of the services. My favorite president said, which is Teddy Roosevelt, you need to have a progressive income tax so those who make the most and can afford it will pay more. We used to have one progressive tax in the state. I've been here since 1946. And in the Great Depression, when property values totally collapsed, we had no sales tax. tax then either. They put in a tax on stocks, bonds, and mortgages. Because the only people who had those were rather wealthy people and who could afford to pay the tax.
Well, a state income tax in Florida is going to be a hard sell, though, Jerry. Thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Dorothy Jacks, the impact in Palm Beach County, especially in light of what County Administrator Joe Abruzzo said this week about possibly losing some $400 million in operating revenue over the next 2 years. What are your thoughts, especially, and I know you've mentioned, as Marty did, their bedroom communities being adversely affected because they rely so heavily on property tax, places like Boynton Beach and Green Acres, for example. What are your thoughts? What are you bracing for up there?
Palm Beach County is very much filled with lovely, small, local communities. We have 39 municipalities in Palm Beach County, and probably, in my estimation, anywhere between probably 6 and 10 of them are in the bullseye, if you will, for this this change, if it is approved by the voters, meaning that they are, as Marty said, bedroom communities where little value is there beyond what homesteaders have already had and had capped for many years. I mean, it's important to note that although somebody might live in a home worth $500,000, if they've lived there for even just 10 years, they probably are only paying tax at the moment on, say, $250,000. And that's the top of the cap limit. So if you think about it, in many of these bedroom communities, residents will pay nothing to their local municipality, the municipality that they love. They will pay their school tax. And the other thing that we haven't discussed yet, and I just want to bring it up, is that taxing authorities are going to have little choice but to raise their tax rate. Yeah. And when they do that, any value that is above the 250 mark, let's say, in 2 years, is going to actually pay more tax than they are paying today on that same value. Yeah. Because if the rates rise, then they're going to pay more. And that doesn't even contemplate moving the tax burden or the expense burden to our non-ad valorem assessments, special assessments, which could also be done under these rules. So, you know, in Palm Beach County, just quickly, you asked, we're, as our administrator said, we're at about $325 million in at the 250 mark. But again, that does not take into account any change in the rates that may occur.
Right. Well, we're going to take a short break here, and when we're back, we'll continue our conversation with Tomas Regalado, Marty Kerr, and Dorothy Jacks, the property appraisers for Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties, about Florida's possible elimination of property taxes. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. Let's continue our conversation with Tomas Regalado, Marty Kerr, and Dorothy Jacks, the property appraisers for Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties, about the potential local government services impact South Florida will feel if Florida voters pass a ballot measure in November to drastically reduce, if not eliminate, property taxes. We, of course, want to hear your thoughts. Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9577. And in fact, we have Peter from Little Havana on the line. He wants to eliminate the homestead exemption. Peter, tell us how you think that would work.
Well, we're in a red state. We're not supposed to be socialists. We're not supposed to provide subsidies to people. That's what we keep hearing. And if you really wanted to eliminate the handcuff that many people have who've homesteaded their properties for decades and are paying very little, and you want to deal with the supply-demand issue, simply eliminate the homestead. Let everything trade the way the market should trade, and lo and behold, the government gets its revenue, and you get people moving out of their homes because they can no longer afford them, and the price adjusts. That's all I would say. If we're a red state, why are we subsidizing anything? So eliminate the homestead is what I would suggest.
No, thanks very much for that thought, Peter. We appreciate it. Tomas Regalado in Miami-Dade County, despite the obvious tax relief this proposal would hand Florida homeowners, even conservatives are criticizing the proposal. The conservative Wall Street Journal editorial page weighed in yesterday, for example, saying it was, quote, disappointed in Governor DeSantis because it said his plan will end up forcing local governments like yours to shift its revenue burdens from homeowners to business owners, sales tax payers, and especially renters to keep services viable. Do they have a point, sir?
No, they do not. They do not have a point because on the ballot, there's also some amendment that talks about reducing the 10% cap to 5% for non-homestead properties.
Okay.
In the beginning of this debate, it was said, well, only commercial, but they included even those second homes that people have. So the renters doesn't have a reason to be chastised for what is happening in November 3rd.
Okay. But you don't foresee a shift in this burden going to renters then as a result of all this?
They can, because the renters live in property that is not homestead, and there's going to be a cap meeting that the owners are going to be paying less than they were paying before. Okay. Now, they may have an excuse about, the government need more money and they're taxing us. But that's not an excuse. That's something that is not happening. And we only have to trust in their goodwill for not hiking the rent to the people.
Okay.
But, you know, Tim, and I, Marty and Dorothy have expressed in details exactly what is going to happen. And we are kind of the same in Miami-Dade County, although we are a poorer county, meaning that we have more poor people, more retired people. And now all these people already have different exemptions, meaning that the governments have not been getting the money from this this exemption for many years. Just in this fiscal year, we have done 40,000 new exemptions for people in Miami-Dade County with the value of $1.18 billion. So we're doing our thing, and the governments are not getting the money since these people have registered for this property.
Right. You're speaking to the point Peter, our caller, earlier made. Marty Kerr in Broward County, what's been your response to the criticism we're seeing, including a lawsuit filed by a group that's emerged here in South Florida called Save Our Voters from Misleading Ballot Language? But other groups like Tax Foundation, for example, are pointing to estimates that we could see sales taxes have to double in this state to more than 15% in order to make up the impact of this measure. Are these valid points and complaints they're making?
Well, here's how I can answer that the best way I can. I've actually had a lot of conversations, just like I'm sure Dorothy has and Tomas has, with many residents on this issue. They're bringing it up to me. They're talking to me about it. And what I think is very, very interesting, Tim, is it's not a political partisan issue. It really isn't. Mm-hmm. As you know, generally, when you have different issues, the Democrats, we go on our little corner, the Republicans go in their little corner. Not in this one. I've had Democrats and Republicans come to me that were supportive of it and who are against it. And so I actually think there are there's a lot of information out there. And I also think the closer you get to November, more information will come out. But now it's on the ballot. And what I think is exceptionally important is the power now is in the hands of the people. And the people, everybody that's going to go vote on this, if you go and vote in Florida, you really need to do your homework because this is a very, very consequential vote. That's the best way I can explain what at least what the people are saying out there. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, I think, probably one of the most consequential votes anybody's ever going to make. Because I said at the beginning, when you're not happy with somebody in public office, you can elect somebody else to that office. But when you change the Constitution, it's there forever.
This is more permanent, right? Dorothy Jackson, Palm Beach County. How do you view the criticism of the property tax measure from the standpoint of how it could unfairly and perhaps inordinately shift the local revenue burden in this state in the manner we've just been discussing?
Well, if I could, Tim, I just wanted to speak to the lawsuit filing because the public
Sure.
should be aware that, this is, I don't want to call it standard practice, but oftentimes when a ballot measure is proposed, especially one that moved as quickly as this one did, there is some question that needs to be decided by the courts as to whether the language explains it enough for
Right.
the regular voter to understand
That
it. So
was one
that's
of
what's happening.
the Wall Street Journal's editorial arguments, is that the governor and the legislature should have let other entities sort of help sift through the details of this before rushing it onto the ballot. Do you agree with that?
Well, I do think that normally we see when exemptions have been raised in past years, when the caps were brought into play, which was all done through the Constitution, through amendments, we did see a lot more discussion, robust discussion at the legislature over the course of their normal weeks of session, rather than the 2 days that happened here. So yeah, I think it's particularly difficult because the cities and the counties haven't really had the time to find out exactly what the consequences will be. The other interesting thing I think is that while the governor's talked about this as a tax elimination, because the school boards have been removed from having to, if you will, be a part of the additional exemptions that have been proposed, it's not an elimination. Everyone will continue to pay the school board tax.
Sure.
So, Marty mentioned earlier the amounts that people will save. I think what people will need to do is find that out from their local property appraiser and then make a decision about is the savings that they are going to get worth the services that they may lose and also the potential that the tax that they pay on the rest of their value may increase. Because, like I said, if you're below those 250,000 thresholds and 150,000 at the moment, well, you're okay. But if you're above them, then you are going to pay a property tax to the county and to your city if you're in
Right.
one and to all the special districts. And if the rate at which the tax is going to be charged increases, well, your taxes are going to increase over time. And at what point does that make up for the difference? And to Marty's point also that, you change the Constitution, it's forever. A lot of these things, if we think about what we will be facing in 5 years or in 10 years in the state in the way of reduced services and the potential of shifting the tax burden, we have to think about that too. It can't be an instantaneous
Right.
gratification thing. We all need to think about it long term.
Right. Now, we just have a few minutes left here, and I want to just engage all three of you very quickly on a larger issue here, not just about property taxes, but the larger idea of local government, of home rule, which, as long as I've been a journalist, was a sacred concept for the Republican Party, especially. Aside from being about tax relief, does this also feel like the state exerting more control over counties and municipalities? Does it undermine home rule? Tomas Regalado?
I think it does, and I think it is undermining local rule because we know that now the only tax that can be increased by a local government, meaning the county, a regional government, is the gas tax. They can, by state mandate, they cannot create another tax. They cannot create an increase in sales tax. So they have to live with that they have to live. So there is an effort from the state to undermine the small communities. But at the end of the day, Marty and Dorothy are right. We need to inform the people. Luckily, we have been told that we have to send in the trim that we will be sending in August the ballot language to more than 1 million people here in Miami-Dade County.
Right.
That is going to help, and
Okay.
hopefully people like you will help to continue to explain this.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, it
Yeah.
would not be the end of the world.
Right. Marty Kerr, your thoughts on that larger question of, admittedly, tax relief, though, versus the potential undermining of home rule?
Well, I can definitely tell you this. I've had the privilege of serving in the Florida legislature and on the Broward County Commission and now as our property appraiser. And I've loved every single bit of it. But I can definitely tell you, I actually believe that local government is by far the most important because you're closest to the people. And as a result, it's your job to really deal with the issues that people are facing every single day. And so I am hopeful that the legislature will, you know, change course maybe in their next legislative session and not do as many unfunded mandates, things of that nature, because right. at the end of the day, we're really the ones down here, especially when you're a city commissioner or a county commissioner, you're the one that's really, really having right. to make the hard choices. And so yeah. that's also why, truthfully, I think it's very important that people really do their research and actually okay. find out where your property taxes go, which right. is basically local services.
And Dorothy Jacks, I'll give you the last word here on this.
I think it's going to, if it passes, it will probably change the face of our state in some ways. There are many counties, not a few, many counties which are already what's called fiscally restrained, which are being subsidized by the state as far as revenue so that they can continue basic operations.
Right.
I don't know how that changes in this new world. And I think that's mm-hmm. got to be addressed. As far as right. state funding to help some of these communities that mm-hmm. have nowhere else to go.
Tomas Regalado, Marty Kerr, and Dorothy Jacks are the property appraisers from Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties. Many thanks to all three of you.
Thank you, Tim. Have
thank
a wonderful
you
day.
For having
you
us.
Too.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Still to come, WLRN reporters take us to the Soccer World Cup. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. The Men's Soccer World Cup is here, literally, since Miami is one of the tournament's host cities for the month-long tournament that started yesterday in the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. So to get you psyched for soccer, we're bringing you some of WLRN's recent World Cup curtain raiser reports. And we'll start in Broward County, where we find the second largest Brazilian diaspora in the U.S. It is, not surprisingly, a soccer-obsessed community whose home country team, known as A Seleção, will play here in Miami later this month. But as WLRN Broward County reporter Carlton Gillespie tells us, economic and political factors may be muting the Seleção excitement.
The volleyball courts on the north side of the Deerfield Beach Pier are always busy on the weekends. The courts fill up by 9 a.m. and stay that way until well into the afternoon. One of the courts there has a net that drops just slightly below regulation height. And they're not playing volleyball there. They're playing foot volley, or as the Brazilians who brought the sport to the beach call it, futebol. It's a dazzling blend of volleyball and soccer skills. The bump, set, spike of volleyball is now a player guiding the ball upward with their chest before their partner heads it up towards the net before an arcing bicycle kick snaps it over to the opposition. The beach, some locals call Deerfield de Janeiro, is one of the many ways the Brazilian community has made its mark in northern Broward.
The right side is American. The left side is the Brazilian.
That's Junior Sandara. He came to the area from Brazil in 1998 and works as the sports director at the First Brazilian Baptist Church in Pompano Beach.
It's funny because you go to the right side, the bikinis and everything, they're really quiet. And if you just cross the pier, the left side, a little samba, a little futebol.
Sandara was part of the early wave of Brazilian immigration to Broward cities like Coconut Creek, Deerfield Beach, and Pompano Beach in the late 90s and early aughts. Today, there are scores of Brazilian businesses lining the commercial corridors in those cities.
I would say by 2010, there were already so many businesses that you could get anything Brazilian you needed.
Renata Botezo is a deputy director at the Florida Immigrant Coalition. She wrote her doctoral thesis on the Brazilian community in South Florida. She was happy to be in America when she arrived to Palm Beach Gardens in 2004, but when she first heard from a friend about a Brazilian bakery in Pompano Beach, she had to drive down.
There are moments in which you miss something. You miss a food item, or you want to hear music. So, and those are the moments that having some infrastructure create some comfort.
Official counts say there are nearly 25,000 Brazilians in Broward County. Botezo says that's definitely an undercount.
No, Brazilians don't know what to answer in the census. That's part of why it becomes so complicated.
Botezo says through her work, the fear of increased immigration enforcement presence at World Cup games is palpable in the community. She said soccer is part of her culture, but that she won't risk going to the stadium.
Absolutely not. Unless FIFA puts explicit rules that will protect those around me, I am absolutely not participating in the same way. It said,
fear of an immigration crackdown isn't the only thing scaring fans away from the games. Sandara's excitement for this World Cup has been diminished by exorbitant ticket prices. For Brazil's game against Scotland at Hard Rock Stadium, the cheapest tickets are more than $1,600. He says everyone he knows feels like they've been priced out.
It's too expensive, the tickets. Really expensive. So I'm not sure if it... You know what? I didn't hear anybody. My friends are going to the game.
Sandara and I are at the basketball court at the First Brazilian Baptist Church. To combat the high cost, the church is already planning its own watch party.
This one here, this is like a stage. It's going down, and we're going to have a big screen TV right there.
Like many from the soccer-crazed nation, the sport is special to Sandara. Growing up, he'd move around a lot with his grandparents, and it was hard for him to make friends. Until he found the nearest pitch.
Okay, where's the soccer field here? Oh, it's right there. All right, I was there. Okay, can I play? Oh, yeah, I can play. Yeah, so boom, that's it. Next day, I had like 20 friends. 20 friends.
Sandara won't actually be at the watch party either. He's found a way around the high prices by volunteering with FIFA, which gets him that coveted stadium access to the South Florida games. I'm Carlton Gillespie in Deerfield Beach.
Brazil plays Scotland at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami Gardens on June 24th. Now let's turn to the heat. Not Miami's NBA team, but the actual torrid South Florida summer temperatures that World Cup players will likely encounter during the seven games to be played in Miami. WLRN environment editor Jenny Stiletovich tells us what they and fans from around the world can expect.
For this heat season, the Miami office of the National Weather Service is adding a whole new target for forecasts. The World Cup.
We're going to be deployed to the Miami-Dade County Emergency Operations Center.
Robert Moeda is the chief meteorologist for the National Weather Service's Miami office.
We're going to have meteorologists deployed to the City of Miami's command post at Bayfront Park, where they're having a fan fest almost on a daily basis for June and parts of July. And we're also going to be at the stadium on game days.
Moeda says to keep up with the additional workload, the Weather Service will be sending reinforcements from around the country. Going out into the field is a little unusual for meteorologists, but not unheard of for big events like the Super Bowl. What makes the World Cup different is the scale and timing. In the dead of summer, not winter, and for seven matches, not one big game.
The heat season is here, the summer is approaching, and we need to really stay safe out there and take those precautionary measures against the heat.
Here in South Florida, we're used to steamy weather. But a few years ago, scientists and weather forecasters realized conditions were getting worse thanks to climate change.
Heat, and tonight, changes are coming to Miami-Dade's Extreme Heat Action Plan.
Heat index topped 110 degrees today, putting South Florida under its first ever excessive heat.
Time now for our favorite part of the day. We get to ask the question, how hot is it?
More intense rainfalls coupled with just a fraction of temperature increases means the feels-like temperature is rising. So a few years ago, Miami-Dade County started a heat season, and the National Weather Service lowered the threshold for issuing warnings to better reflect those worsening risks from hot weather.
People, the way they experience heat in Miami is very different than the way heat is experienced in other cities in the U.S.
Amy Clement is an atmospheric scientist at the University of Miami Rosenstiel School who studies heat. I went to see Clement to find out if a stadium full of enthusiastic soccer fans might have special risk from the heat. She says about 4 months out of the year, including when the World Cup is being played in South Florida, temperatures consistently reach levels considered dangerous by the Weather Service.
In Miami, we've moved away from this idea about heat waves because heat doesn't come in waves here. It starts in May and ends in October.
But she says for many different reasons, heat produced by pavement, air conditioners, car exhaust, even by people in crowds like the World Cup, it can be difficult to predict just how much heat can be experienced in a specific place at a specific time.
So I actually don't even know if I can answer your question about the stadium itself, whether it will be exposed.
Her lab at Rosenstiel has tried to pin down the answer by doing studies that involve visiting people's homes or workplaces.
Exposure to heat here is very dependent on your occupation, on your income, and your vulnerability to it depends on pre-existing conditions or, you know, health status. And all of these things weave together in ways that make it really complex for people here in South Florida to deal with heat.
It's an important question to answer because for Weather Service warnings to be effective and protect people, there need to be thresholds. But unlike flooding or lightning, how someone experiences heat has a lot of variables.
It's a real gray area of what the threshold should be. And that's the same discussion happening right now with the FIFA and the fans. It's like, who's at risk at what level of heat? And how would you know? And how would you even monitor it?
FIFA, soccer's international governing body, has rules about heat for players. It's based on what's called the wet bulb temperature, which combines temperature with humidity to determine whether sweat can effectively cool the body. In December, FIFA announced it would impose water breaks halfway through each half of the matches, regardless of weather or location. Moeda, the forecasting chief at the Miami Weather Service, says meteorologists will be posted at player training facilities to help track the heat risk to players. But what about fans and all the workers?
Great that the athletes will be kept, that they should be kept healthy. But I think the bigger risk here is the fans. And let me just say that, you know, then there's the rest of us who are living here. Many of us are, you know, well adapted because we're in air conditioned, you know, work environments. But a lot of people, according to the census data, 25% of laborers in Florida work outdoors.
Besides the stadium and training facilities, Moeda says meteorologists will be stationed at places where fans gather to provide information to soccer officials and emergency managers. They'll also be at transportation hubs. He says the Weather Service will also be issuing advisories directly to the public, like during a regular heat season.
For a critical event like this where, you know, tens of thousands of people, safety is super important.
As for cooling stations or other measures to address heat, officials at Hard Rock Stadium referred questions to FIFA. FIFA did not respond to WLRN's request for comment. Miami's local host committee is overseeing events in downtown Miami and at parks all around the county. In an email to WLRN, a spokeswoman said shade, access to water and hydration, and cooling features will be available. The nighttime matches mean stadium temperatures will be slightly cooler, but Clemens says out-of-towners might be caught off guard by how hot it can be at night in South Florida. That's because of the humidity. Nights don't cool down nearly as much as they do in other places.
At nighttime, when the sun is not shining, the earth is radiating heat away to space. And that's why in a desert, it's cool because it's so dry, all that heat just goes right out to space. But here in Florida, at nighttime, there's a layer of humidity that traps the radiation.
So she says fans need to remember to be proactive, stay hydrated, find shade when you can, and...
Beware. It's going to be hot. That's my prediction.
And remember, in the words of Shakira, the sun comes out when you least expect it. I'm Jenny Stiletovich in Miami.
Miami will host the World Cup bronze final game on July 18th. This year, Haiti's men qualified for the World Cup for the first time in more than half a century. That's created a somewhat awkward situation for Haitian fans, though, who for decades have rooted for Brazil. WLRN's Wilkin Brutus spoke with Haitians about shifting their loyalties back to Les Grenadiers.
Les Grenadiers, Haiti's national soccer team, is back on the world stage for its first World Cup appearance in over 50 years, and the feat has rightly dominated the headlines. In songs like Kampasote, which translates to I'm Unafraid by the iconic Haitian band Boukman Experience, is a cultural rallying cry heard across stadiums. But Haitian culture has been dominating social media feeds for a few years now, driven by music and dance genres like Labodai and Compa, the viral 2026 Winter Olympics opening ceremony uniforms, and a new appreciation for Haitian food, art, and literature. It's a global renaissance, says the Haitian diaspora, who attended a sold-out friendly match between Haiti and Peru at the nearly 30,000-seat new stadium in Miami.
When I first came here, it was a shame to be Haitian.
Patrick Casimir immigrated here from Haiti in 1991. He was among many Haitians who faced severe social and legal discrimination. He noted a distinct cultural shift by 1996 with the rise of the Fugees, the hip-hop group founded by Haitians Wyclef Jean and Praz Michel, along with Lauryn Hill.
Ready or not, here I come, you can't hide. Gonna find you and take it slowly.
Casimir says it took the group's mainstream success to spark a broader interest in Haitian culture.
With Fuji starting long ago, we became pride to our country. We happy to be Haitian, but that's not the same like in the 80s. People would be ashamed to say they're Haitian, but not anymore.
That interest has grown into appreciation. Haiti's compa music was recently added to a UNESCO cultural heritage list. Haitian traditional food staples, like the iconic black mushroom rice, du jonjon, and the slow-cooked vegetable stew, légumes, receive praise from upscale culinary spaces. Haitian American and Pompano native Marlon Simius says Haitians aren't seeking validation, they're demanding respect.
We don't need to prove anything to anybody. It's just good to see that younger generation seeing that, the pridefulness and just the Socrates, something we can get behind.
Historic milestones include achievements in mainstream art, academia, and literature. Rosa Zephyr is a Haitian American from Homestead. She says soccer's biggest stage is amplifying the small and big cultural wins for Haiti.
And let me just say, growing up, you know, we went through so much scrutiny. We went through so much, like, you know, people scrutinize our culture, people scrutinize our food. So to be able to see everyone present, and especially with FIFA World Cup bringing us more closer to each other, it's such an honor.
Haiti and Curaçao are just two Caribbean island nations competing in the 48-team FIFA World Cup tournament.
It's beautiful to finally have our own team, have something that is yours.
Haitian fans who previously supported the likes of Brazil or Argentina now cannot wait to cheer on their own team, says Louis Laurent Jumel, who is from the Latibonite region in Haiti.
You know, this is when we looked at Brazil, we was like, I wish when we get there, this is a team that we want to, this is the energy and this is the feeling I want to have when my national team plays. We're here. So how do we play with that duality? Well, there's no duality. You know, it's you are Haitian, we are Haitian, we are one.
South Florida has the largest concentration of Haitians outside of Haiti. For the World Cup, the national team will compete in a very competitive group that includes powerhouses Morocco, Scotland, and Brazil. I'm Wilkin Brutus in Miami.
Finally on the roundup, nothing is better than watching soccer with friends, and World Cup watch parties will be going on across South Florida starting this weekend for teams of all nations. With the tournament kicking off yesterday, fans of Mexico gathered on Miami Beach to watch El Tri win at home 2-0 versus South Africa. Team USA kicks off their tournament tonight at 9 p.m. versus Paraguay. And fans can come together at Amerant Bank Arena in Sunrise for a special watch event there. Admission is free, but you need to register on SeatGeek for tickets. Do you support Brazil? Visit Bounce Del Rey Beach on Saturday at 6 p.m. to watch Aselisao take on Morocco. Supporters of Haiti or Scotland can go to Nomi Village in North Miami Beach, in North Miami to see the match at 9 p.m. Or why not visit a beer garden to watch Germany versus Curaçao? Biergarten Boca in Boca Raton will host an Oktoberfest on Sunday at 1 p.m. Later on, fans of Colombia or Portugal can watch them square off on June 27th at 7:30 p.m. at a Watch Fiesta in downtown Hollywood, featuring a live musical performance from Colombian-American singer Ale Moore. Little Haiti Soccer Park will host a bronze medal match watch party on July 18th for the game taking place not too far away at Miami Stadium. Fans can watch the championship match on July 19th at Tropical Park. And all throughout the tournament, fans can visit the official FIFA World Cup Fan Fest at Bayfront Park from June 13th to July 5th for live music, food, and games streaming on big screens. That will do it for the South Florida Roundup. I'm Tim Padgett. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening. Gracias, merci, obrigado.
WLRN.